Item 1.
Presentation by the Wisconsin Counties Association titled Wisconsin State Budget, History and What's to Come. This item will be followed by a question and answer segment.
All right. So this is a presentation. I saw an earlier version of this at the WCA last month and thought it would be helpful for members to have a little bit of the history as well as a little preview of how things are shaping up at the state. And I believe that the WCA has customized it a little bit for the Milwaukee experience. So thank you. And we are joined, if you would introduce yourself, Ms. Stevens.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so pleased to be here with you today. There's so many familiar faces, both from the legislature and the county board, and so many knowledgeable faces as well. So some of this may come as a re-education for you. Some of it may be new, but the goal is that we hope we're presenting it in a way that's a little bit different, that focuses on some of the nuances of the way in which the state-county relationship interacts. It's a fairly unique relationship, and we hope that you take something away from it. If there's a question while I'm presenting, feel free to just interject. I think having a dialogue will kind of help move this along, but with that, I'll get started. These are the topics that I want to cover today, everything kind of from state finance to how it affects counties to the upcoming budget and what we should be looking for in the state budget. But first we want to discuss why the budget matters to you, and it really is driven by the fact that Wisconsin has a fairly unique relationship with local governments. Only 7 states in the country provide a higher share of local government revenue to local governments. And governments here do more than 55% of the service delivery. That's higher than all but 15 states. So what this really means is that counties are heavily reliant on the state for to provide resources for the services that the state tells them to provide. And again, it's a fairly unique relationship nationwide. A lot of other states have local impact income taxes, local option gas taxes. So local governments aren't as reliant on the state to provide the services. In Wisconsin, we don't have any of those. Although there is a local option income tax on the books here in the state, it's not yet been used. In a couple of counties, there has been a local option kind of gas tax that has been used, but it's only been used in 2 counties to date. So all in all, what it means is that the taxing and spending decisions at the state level are highly, highly influential on county budgets. So most of you know this. The general purpose revenue funds the general fund, which is where the majority of county programs are funded from. With the exception of highway aid, state and local highway aid, the general fund really supports those activities. So the GPR fund really funds UW system, corrections, Medicaid, school aid, and, of course, shared revenue, one of county's biggest and most highly dependent resources from the state. So any cuts, for instance, an income tax cut to GPR has a potentially significant impact on what kind of revenue counties can expect to receive in the upcoming budget. So the next slide I wanted to show you is of the transportation fund. The transportation fund is growing more slowly than even the general fund, which has been growing at an anemic pace, particularly over the last 5 years since the recession hit. You can see last year was a fairly good year. More people were driving than previously in the recession. But all in all, it's growing more slowly than is the general fund. A couple of reasons for that. Primary reason is that it's 90% of the transportation fund's funds are generated from the gas tax and vehicle registration fees. Gas tax is relatively flat due in part to more gas-efficient vehicles and fewer people driving. There are more people in the state that are going down to 1 car rather than 2 cars, which also then in turn impacts the vehicle registration fees. So as we have these families who are driving less, downsizing their vehicles, both of those revenue sources are severely impacted, and then so too is the transportation fund. The other issue that's really impacting the transportation fund is that debt service, payments on debt service, are becoming the largest payment, the largest expenditure in the transportation fund. So what that means is before we can even fund a dime of a single program, debt service on all of these programs has to be spent. So that constrains the state's ability to pass these revenues on to the local revenue in the form of general transportation aids, in the form of LRIP, in the form of routine maintenance agreements so that we can maintain the state highway system on behalf of the state. So constraints both in the general fund and in the transportation fund, the two major funds in the state budget. So why does this matter? For counties, and this is a statewide picture, not a Milwaukee-specific picture, but it's fairly consistent statewide. State aids, and that includes everything, both from the transportation and the general fund, constitute about 25% of a county budget. Taxes, property and sales tax, constitute the next largest share. Other, which is bonding and debt service, is the next largest share. So you can see here that when there is constraints on the funding that counties are able to receive, it really impacts in a significant way the county's ability to make their budget whole. So this is kind of a snapshot of two periods in time, 2000 to 2005, and 2005 notably was when property tax limits were first instituted, and then 2005 to 2010. So the things that are most notable that I wanted to just point out for you is that you can see in the top line there that taxes constituted about 5.7% of the county's budget. After property tax limits are imposed, it's down to 3.1%. The next most notable thing is that in other financing, which is bonding, because it can occur outside of property tax limits, went from 5% to 12.1%. Well, why did this happen? Two reasons. First, which I already mentioned, bonding can occur outside of the property tax limits. And the other reason is that in that box, state aids are cut by 1.4% over that period, but really they've been cut by about 10% annually over that period. So at the same time that state aids are decreasing, that county property tax levies are unable to fund the services, but the services that the county is mandated to provide still exist. The only way to make up the difference for counties has been to bond and to borrow. So that's kind of the picture that we've been seeing. And so in all of that, growth in county government went from 4.5% in 2005 to 2.9% in 2010, a significant constraint. And some of this is because priorities change. I think there can be arguments on both sides whether the priorities were right or wrong, but nonetheless they change, and that really has impacted the way in which the picture of county government financing has changed as well. So two snapshots in time for you here again, 1989 to 1991, and then 2001 to 2003. The thing that's notable is that in 1995, two-thirds funding for K-12 aides was instituted. So you see in 1989, aids to local education in the yellow part there went from 28% in 89 to 42% in 2001 and 2003. So clearly that was the direction that the legislature chose to go in that era, to put a priority on funding school aids and to take the school aids off the property tax bill. So much of that increase was designed to relieve local property taxpayers, which is a great thing, except that in so doing, the biggest hit came to aids to cities and villages and counties and other municipalities. So while the local property taxpayer was unburdened from some of these educational expenses, county governments, which again have the same operational and workload, were not. In fact, they saw the largest shrink from 27% in 89 to 17% in 2001-3. The next greatest hit came to aids to individuals and organizations. This is Medicaid, corrections, things like that. So also a big hit there, but clearly the primary hit was to shared revenue. So taking this 10 years forward and looking at it again, there's been another shift in priorities in the state budget. Again, not debating the merit of the shift, but simply kind of assessing where and why and how we've gotten to where we are today. You see in 2005, aids to local education went from 42% to 35% in 2011-13. Significant decrease, And interestingly, despite state operations and aids to cities, villages, and counties remaining about equivalent, aids to individuals and organizations increased dramatically. In 2011-13, there was still significant Medicaid growth as a result of the recession. Corrections costs continue to increase. And so as a result, the shift in priorities from school aid funding to aids to local governments has really taken place. State operations is UW System. Actually, corrections is in state operations. So it's those two primarily. So, yeah, forgive me. So aids to individuals primarily constitutes Medicaid and then some refundable tax credits, homestead tax credits, stuff like that. Thank you. So this continues then to show kind of how this shift has occurred and programmatically what the impact has been. So you see in 1999 kind of a snapshot. We go through the two-thirds funding phase. We go through the shift in growing the Medicaid program. And what we end up with in 2011 is big growth in Medicaid, as you can see, a big hit to UW System. We kind of broke out some of these specific programs that saw significant hits, and a big cut to shared revenue. So that shift in priority from school aids to Medicaid has resulted in a number of other programs seeing significant revenue losses. So from all of that, you could have derived, without me telling you, that local shared revenues have declined significantly over the last 15 years. They've been flat. They were flat early in the decade, a slight loss in 2010, but you see in 2012, counties saw a significant decline in shared revenue. This table only constitutes county aid, so it doesn't account for town or municipal aids. But at the same time, when we are under property tax limits at 0%, we're also receiving less state aid, despite all of the state aid being collected at the state level to be used by local governments to provide state-mandated services. So a bit of a conundrum here. How do we move forward? How do we really work on financing this? And how do we get out of this hole in which we find ourselves? So in addition to the actual budget, there are also kind of ancillary issues that are impacted by the state budget, namely property tax controls and rate limit controls. The rate limit is something obscure that Milwaukee County fortunately doesn't have to deal with for some time out because it's 21% below the rate limit. But there are several, these nine included up here, who are dangerously close to the rate limit. The rate limit was established in 92 in the budget as a means to put a freeze on local governments without it really being harmful or significant. It was thought that it was something that would control operating limits without really harming local governments. And that was the case until the recession hit. And as property values have started to decline, the rate limit and the operating limit has started to grow closer and closer. So what we find now are several counties. Columbia County was the first to hit the rate limit. And what had to occur was because it could no longer increase its rate limit, it had to cut about $1 million out of its highway budget. So a real significant loss. And this is, again, simply because equalized values dropped so dramatically in many of these communities. And many of these communities also had very low operating rates to begin with, because once they instituted a sales tax, a local option sales tax, they cut their operating limit. So it's kind of this double-edged sword. You cut your operating limit because you got a sales tax, but in so doing, you're now potentially threatened with a rate tax limit. So I mentioned that Milwaukee County is well below its rate limit, but still something to be thinking about. So property tax controls have also tightened over the last budget or so. It's kind of gone from 3.86 all the way down to 0% or net new construction in the last biennium. Milwaukee County right now has growth of net new construction of 0.67%, which compares to the statewide average of 0.74%. So very small growth right now accommodates a county's ability to levy. What's important, however, is that many counties levy above that small percentage of net new construction, in part, again, because borrowing is outside of the net new construction. But it can't be argued. I think it's been definitively written about several times that since 1997, the 0.2% levy increase statewide is the smallest since 1997. And so, from a county perspective, and you see kind of all of the municipal taxing districts here in this chart, but from a county perspective, we would argue that we're generally the most conservative taxers. Counties in every year but 2009 or 2010, when it was the same as the municipal statewide levy, and 2012, when the school levy was reduced by 1%, were the most conservative taxing entity. So what that means is not only that counties are conservative in terms of their levying, but that they're also growing more slowly than almost every other entity in the state, including state government, which grows at approximately 4% on average per year. County government is growing just under 2% every year. So levy limits were changed fairly substantially in the last budget. You're all familiar with, I think, these changes, changing from 3% to 0% guaranteed levy limit or net new construction, again, 0.74% statewide. Perhaps the most significant change was the change that made the base levy from the prior year, the allowable levy, change it from the allowable levy in the prior year to the actual levy in the prior year. So what that precluded from happening is that if in a certain year a county had the ability to tax up to 0.8% and they only did up to 0.6%, they could carry that 0.2% forward. They didn't want to, if they didn't need the full 0.8%, they didn't have to tax it. They were able to carry it forward. That's changed. So the base levy in this scenario would now become the 0.6% levy. So essentially it's created this kind of strange situation where counties are wary to tax to the limit if they don't need it, but they're also wary to not tax to the limit because it could penalize them since they don't have the carryover authority. So it's kind of this interesting double-edged sword, and in some counties it really has encouraged counties to levy to the maximum so that they do have that available levy in the next levy despite perhaps not needing it. The other thing that happened was there was a suspension on the rate tax limit, which we talked about, that Milwaukee County is 20% below right now. It was suspended for the biennium only, but it's going to be coming up again, and the situation of Columbia County, even though it was just Columbia, one county in the prior biennium, it's going to be in several counties in the next biennium that there is going to be a situation where they're coming up into abutting the rate tax limit such that they will be forced to make cuts to their operating budgets. So again, just in context, all of these changes kind of happened simultaneous to a dramatic decrease in shared revenue. So again, which is why the borrowing has come in to fill many of these holes. So moving forward and just the budget cycle, I know this is something that you're all very familiar with and I need not go into great detail on it, but a number of things will be happening in the next several months. Agencies have been requested to submit the request and they have been submitted. All but DOT's was submitted on September 17th. The Department of Transportation's budget was submitted just a few weeks ago, and we're expecting to see, as usual, the governor introduce his budget in mid-February, early to mid-February. So the interesting part about this budget is that it presents a lot of new opportunities to renew a county-state partnership and to continue to carry forward that administrative arm of state government through county service. And it's fortunate because the budget does actually begin in rare territory in the sense that it doesn't have a structural deficit. And so I thought this quote from Rob Reinhart was a good illustration of what has happened. And he says, some people might argue the cuts on local aid payments were more than local governments would happen, that it pushed the problem down to the local governments. But there's no question that the budget decisions had a very large impact on balancing the state structural deficit. So, you know, there are two things going on here. The state had been running significant structural deficits for decades, nearly two decades, and it was resolved in this budget in part by reductions in state aid to local units of government. So right or wrong, and whichever side you come down on, the fact of the matter is that, one, local governments did see significant cuts, but two, the budget is balanced and there is no structural deficit. Why this means something, the fact that there is no structural deficit means something, I thought I'd kind of dig into the weeds, and if I see eyes glazing over, I'll skip ahead. But the reason this means something is that for the past however many budgets that we can all remember, for the past 20 years, we started with a structural deficit. So starting with this bubble on the left here, where you see a $28 billion general fund state budget, we have expenses that, say, in the 2009-11 or the 11-13 budget were $28 billion, and we filled it. But now, due to the recession, we only have $27 billion in general fund tax collections because the recession caused our collections to contract. So if you don't want to raise taxes, if you don't want to make spending cuts, if you don't want to use transfers, some of these one-time things to fix the deficit, then what do you have to do? You have to find some way to fill the hole. A couple of ways that we've done it in the past are some of those one-time transfers that I talked about, you know, the IPFCF transfer, some bonding has often gone into it, but most recently it was stimulus. So despite having $28 billion in expenditures, obligations, and only $27 billion in tax collections, we filled that hole with $1 billion in stimulus funds. And so now we have a $1 billion structural deficit in the 11-13 budget. So why this means something and why it's exciting in some ways that there is no longer a structural deficit is that in addition to using stimulus and one-time transfers to fill these holes, which have been frankly much bigger than $1 billion, but we've also used revenue growth. The economy has been growing over the past 20 years, and so we've had to use that revenue growth that's anticipated throughout the course of the budget in filling this structural deficit hole. So we've had to make the programs whole, not to adequately fund them or increase or expand or do anything like that. It's been this constant catch-up of funding the existing programs. So why this is exciting, I think, for county governments is that it's an opportunity to really renew a partnership with the state, because for the first time in many years, there is not going to be that need to use the structure, projected revenue growth to fill a structural deficit hole. So this kind of illustrates just over the last 15 years what we've seen and what we've been talking about. Again, $125 million, that's a fairly old number. The good is going to be perhaps even larger than that, but the deficits ranged all the way from 2.5 to 1.5 throughout the last 20 years or so. So what does that mean and what can we expect? So DOR came out with their numbers just a month or so ago, and they're expecting revenue growth of 3.8 and 3.5% respectively in fiscal years 14 and 15 for total biennial growth of $1.52 billion. I think the conservative estimate is between $1 and $1.5 billion in growth, but LFB, the Fiscal Bureau, will release its projections in January, and as former budget director Dave Schmidtke would always say, these numbers are fungible. He never would allow himself to be pinned down on it, so keep that in mind. And to kind of illustrate that fungibility, as Dave would say, are a couple of things. The first is that these revenue projections anticipate a return of the estate tax in Wisconsin. Wisconsin's estate tax credit is tied to the federal estate tax. So if the federal government does actually, in these fiscal cliff negotiations, allow the estate tax to come back, so too then will Wisconsin's federal credit, unless they say no, because the state, all of these 25 states that have a state credit on their books, creates further deficit for the federal government. So the betting odds are on the estate tax coming back, but not with estate credits. So if we do not, if our state credit is no longer coupled then with the federal estate tax, we'll lose about $220 million over the biennium. So that $1 to $1.5 billion number suddenly becomes $800 to $1.3 million number. And then you have to account for things like tax cuts that have been discussed, other program expenditures and agency requests that are fairly significant in this budget. So that growth, while exciting, has some pitfalls on the outset. So to illustrate how that revenue projection, though exciting, can be tempered perhaps a little bit, is that in fiscal year 14, GPR, the agencies have requested an increase of 3.6% in GPR spending and 3.5% in fiscal year 15. So were all of those agency requests funded, which we know they won't be. That's, you know, we can all live and dream. But they are not going to be. But were they to be all financed, the budget would be $390 million in the hole. So you can see how quickly a seeming sizable revenue projection can be eaten up. And to illustrate further, I don't think we're hearing that, you know, an income tax of this size is perhaps in the range. But just to give you kind of an illustration of what it might look like, if you reduce income taxes by just 10%, that's $715 million or $1.4 billion over the biennium. If you want to reduce Wisconsin's income tax burden from 12th to 20th in the country, you have to reduce the income tax by $966 million, which is $1.8 billion over the biennium. Oops.
Uh-oh. Bear with us.
There we go. And then if you want to reduce Wisconsin's income tax burden to the national average, it's $1.9 billion or $3.8 billion over the biennium. So it's significant revenue. And, you know, frankly, what we're hearing is that it's really diffusive across all of the tax sections. So if you're earning about $30,000 or less in Wisconsin, it's a really good place to live. The tax rates are low, and there are a lot of refundable credits. If you're living as one of the wealthier folks in the country, your tax burden is also very good, So if you're living in Wisconsin and have an income of about $250,000 or more, you're also living fairly at the average or just below the average. Where it really comes into play is if you're making between $40,000 and $250,000 annually, you have a tax burden of between the fifth and eighth highest in the country. So the middle class really is at the greatest disadvantage in terms of the income tax, and that's also where we've been hearing, as many of you, where the income tax may be targeted, at that middle income tax bracket that's more significantly burdened than are the lower taxing brackets and the higher taxing brackets. So also, I think we can expect some new transportation funding. Secretary Gottlieb, when he did introduce his budget, introduced a maintenance budget, essentially, a cost-to-continue budget. He did not include any new revenue in his budget, and what resulted was maintenance went way up, but investment in majors and rehab went way down. I think we can safely say that that's not the desire of policymakers nor industry stakeholders. But nonetheless, Secretary Gottlieb was forced to show what a cost-to-continue budget looked like. For local aids, they remained flat. The only increase, again, were in those types of activities that maintained the system. So routine maintenance agreements with counties to maintain the state highway infrastructure did go up. But I think that from Secretary Gottlieb's budget, it's fairly clear that new revenues have to be on the table. So what are some of those new revenues? It's unclear whether there's political support for any of these revenues, but the Transportation Policy Finance Commission is going to introduce several sets of new revenues, potentially a 5-cent increase in the gas tax, restoration of gas tax indexing, a low-tech VMT at 1 cent a mile,
elimination of the sales tax exemption for auto trade-ins, an electric vehicle surcharge, and restoration of RTAs, all as ways to fund transportation both locally and statewide. They're also, the commission is also recommending GTAs remain flat or increase at the rate of inflation, so essentially flat funding, that routine maintenance agreements increase at $33 million annually, and that LRIP increase by $40 million over the next 10 years. Clearly, many of these options are not politically palatable for a variety of different reasons, and so it's possible, certainly, that the ultimate outcome may be a transfer from the general fund into the transportation fund. You're already familiar with the $125 million that came from the general fund and went into the transportation fund, and then the 0.25%, which will go annually in perpetuity into the transportation fund. So certainly, I think there's the expectation that continued property tax controls will remain on county budgets. Levy limits, certainly, we're hopeful that rate limits, because there is no need really for rate limits now because of permanent property tax controls, the rate limits are duplicative and aren't working in the way that they had thought that they would work initially. So, but certainly I think it can be expected to see a continuation of property tax controls. The other thing that looks like it will continue is growth in Medicaid. We talked about kind of that shift from K-12 funding to Medicaid, and it's kind of capitalized on by Secretary Smith's seeking of $658 million in GVR funding for Medicaid. It's driven kind of by FMAP, but also enrollment increases. The recession isn't over, and enrollees are continuing to grow. So if that were the case, if the Medicaid budget were fully funded, the $658 million, it would eat, just for instance, half of the new projected revenue growth in the state. The other thing that legislative leaders have talked about, even though the DHS budget does not request it, is a family care expansion statewide. Legislative leaders, including those on the Joint Finance Committee, have discussed family care expansion as a priority, so it's something that may be interesting to follow in the Medicaid budget. And more rainy day deposits are certainly on the horizon. We have made two consecutive rainy day fund deposits, which is great, but among all states, only Arkansas has a smaller rainy day fund. So still a lot of work to do, and just to put it in perspective, the two rainy day deposits will account for less than 1% of all states' fund spending. So a much better position than we were in, but still a long way to go in stabilizing our rainy day fund. So just in terms of bills that are going on outside, the the state budget, but also inside are, of course, mining and venture capital, high poverty aids, youth aids, transit, performance-based school funding, voucher, schools, same-day registration, right to work. These are all things that have been discussed fairly robustly in the last few weeks, but something that you all know, I'm sure, more about than I do. But these are some of the things that we're working on and following as counties, and expect to see some action on in the legislature. So with that, I'll bring this to a close, and if there are any questions, I'm certainly happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Ms. Stevens. I did want to just take a moment. I failed to acknowledge the number of supervisors who are also in attendance, so just acknowledge Supervisor Stamper, Supervisor Johnson, Supervisor Jersick, Supervisor Bowen, Supervisor Borkowski, and Supervisor Haas. I appreciate everyone's attendance. Supervisor Johnson, I believe I mentioned him. Thank you. So thank you all for attending as well. It's a lot of material to digest, but I found it helpful when I first saw the presentation. I hope others did. Are there questions? Chairwoman.
Thank you, Chairman Lipscomb. Thank you so much for this presentation. I think it really does put things in perspective. I was drawn to the slide. I don't have these numbered, but the property tax controls, comparing property tax changes, where you further discussed how the counties have been on the more conservative side when it's come to increasing or changing in property tax levy. Ms. Stevens, is that, I'm just trying to understand that chart. So that's from 2007 to, okay, I guess it's slide 17, from 2007 to 12. Are those averages of all counties in the state of Wisconsin then?
Yes.
And then each corresponding tech college, school, et cetera?
Exactly.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because that was a very interesting slide to me. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Very good. Other questions? Supervisor Bowen.
Perhaps
if you could just step up to a mic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask a question about that potential income tax cut. If that was targeted towards that middle class portion, would we see those full numbers, or would it be a smaller tax cut? Are these numbers that represent all those income brackets, or just that middle class?
No, this represents an across-the-board income tax cut of, say, 0.5% or whatever. But what we're hearing and what we think is more likely to be the outcome is that it's clear, it's becoming more clear, I think, to policymakers and watchers alike that a small nominal income tax cut, such that there is money to do, doesn't really have the nominal impact of dropping rates to a point where it stimulates all kinds of economic activity. We're not talking about, I don't think in any of these, I mean, 10% would be $1.4 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Even 10% can't happen. So we're not talking about a drop in rates from 37% to 25% at all. And so I think what policymakers and the administration are trying to angle towards is to make a targeted tax cut at the middle class that's very modest, but also to do something about property tax burdens as well. Now, that could come in the form of school aids, and the caveat being, however, if revenue limits aren't increased, schools won't necessarily result in any more funding. They'll simply result in state funding instead of local spending. So that's more likely the scenario that we're hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And obviously, the opportunity to ask questions is available to anyone. So if you're in the audience and you have a question, if you just step up to the mic. Otherwise, if there's anyone at the table, just signal me. I really appreciate the presentation. I think, you know, we regularly talk about the partnership and the challenges that we both face, but to see it graphically and the magnitude of those was helpful to me, and hopefully it'll inform some of our discussions going forward. I don't Representative Zepnik. Could Senator Larson, could you share that microphone?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
At the risk of sort of, you know, showing some of the divisional lines within, you know, your own counties association, I mean, do you have a sense, Liz, given that, you know, today a lot of us are focused primarily on, you know, what's going to be happening in Milwaukee County, state's largest urban area, in terms of how much of a redistribution effect there is, when it comes either in the form of federal aid, which I thought that the statewide average is probably lower than what is pumping into Milwaukee County. And then similarly, you know, what happens during the state budget process when it comes to different, you know, allocations to local units of government. You know, without putting you on the spot in terms of, like, you know,
numbers.
The, you know, every 72 counties, you know, whoever remembers, I mean, are there, my gut tells me that there's some level of, you know, shifting and, you know, either backfilling some portions of the state, their local government budgets, which has to come out of somewhere, either, you know, more populated areas like Milwaukee and Dane County and Waukesha, but I don't have, not knowing what's going on in the rest of the other counties, I'm not sure what that is, and I was wondering if you guys ever really delve into that.
A little bit, yes, because we need to know how particular changes are going to impact, for instance, the funding redistribution.
So, for instance, general transportation aids, Milwaukee gets not a disproportionate share, but it's based on lane miles, labor costs. It's a very complex system. Policing needs, it's a very complicated system, and Milwaukee fares well in that distribution. Other, like more rural areas, fare not as well, but they don't have as many lane miles, and so they're not as reliant on GTAs to fund county road maintenance. They're more reliant on their own local property tax base. And so, same with routine maintenance. Routine maintenance is where there are a lot of state highways. There are a lot of state highways in Milwaukee County. Not as many in some other counties. And so there is definitely an instance where Milwaukee County fares very well with routine maintenance contracts because it is required to maintain so many miles of lane miles. So high poverty aids, though, kind of inverse all of that. High poverty aids are school aids that go to rural districts. So we're talking the Trumbull counties and west central Wisconsin and things like that, which doesn't take any way, it's not a redistributional formula, except within those schools that qualify for it. But it's certainly one of those, sparsity aids, excuse me, not high poverty aids. High poverty aids are also a Milwaukee benefit. So, yeah, we do analyze that. Those are a few programs that I think are most starkly representative of the fact that Milwaukee County has a lot of infrastructure resources to maintain. And by virtue of that, having that, you receive adequate money to support that.
What about public safety dollars?
I don't know off the top of my head public safety dollars. I think that there's a line item in the state budget, and maybe Representative Stone, who knows the state budget well, or Kelly or Jamie can jump in, but I think Milwaukee County has a line item for patrolling the freeways. And so that's unique to Milwaukee County. And Milwaukee County, though, is the only county that patrols its freeways, its interstates. Otherwise, the state patrol does it.
Although I don't think
it hasn't, but it's right around like 1.7, something like that. But it's the only county that receives that allocation. And then there are some counties that have lift bridges, for instance. And so there are only 7 in the state, so only 7 counties receive a lift for their chase. He did. I can vouch for that.
Just to be clear, I mean, and if I can always follow up with you.
Yeah,
but,
no, it's great.
But I was also, when I was thinking public safety, I was also thinking, you know, courts, jails, and juvenile facilities.
Yeah. Sure. So, like, youth aids, kind of things like that, too.
Yeah, but I'm trying to find a polite way to find out, are we getting screwed in Milwaukee County?
Yeah, I can work with you. I don't know. Those numbers, I don't get into as much, but I will dig into them and get back to you.
Thank you.
It's a great question, Representative Zepnik. I know we regularly deal with that on a formula by formula scenario when changes are proposed.
Well, the needs are going like this, and the revenues are going. You know.
Correct. So I see our IGR staff writing that down as a follow up. So
like
I'm
a
sure
population.
That
we'll
I don't see
more.
I don't see them writing
more than they were while
like
you
a per
were
capita
listening
kind
intently.
Of expenditure is that kind of what you're looking for, Representative?
I'm thinking supply and demand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've certainly on an individual basis we've seen that on a lot of.
There's a lot of dumping. I call it sort of the dumping effect. And
so we'll certainly look into that,
yeah.
Supervisor.
You know,
where
problems are dumped, but the funds are shipped elsewhere, and it kind of goes in a circle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question. It's my understanding that if Milwaukee County wanted to raise its sales tax in order to have a dedicated funding source for something like transit, that we would need the state's permission in order to do that. Aside from the praise or critiques that each representative or senator would face from their own constituencies on a personal or political level, what types of benefits or drawbacks would there be for the state on an organizational level if they were to allow us that sort of funding?
I think it's actually a really interesting debate because on the one hand, local option taxes, which are really popular in other states, both, like I said, both income and gas local option taxes, is a good way for the state to say, you have the authority, but you do it yourself.
And so is that a good thing, or is that a positive or a negative? I don't know. I guess it depends whether you are a state or local lawmaker. The other thing, though, is that riders come from outside these areas as well. And is it fair? The question is always fair. People have lost elections over whether it's fair to tax a jurisdiction that has lesser usage of the system and to not tax a jurisdiction that has more use of the system. It's the same argument with tolling and things like that. The local option, though, I think has been successful in other areas. I think it's St. Croix County that does have a local option gas tax. Hmm. And they had to pass a referendum, countywide referendum, that enabled them to raise the revenue, and it had to be distributed then to the highway fund. And that's the way they used it to maintain their state highways. So it was kind of like at the state level how we would segregate it into a segregated transportation fund. Now, little of that money has been used for highway restoration. It happened at a bad time. So I think the drawback of being able to commit those resources and understand what the resources are that you need is going to be really challenging, and what you want to fund with the resources. But as far as giving locals flexibility to deal with local problems, from a county perspective, we certainly welcome that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I don't know if it's St. Croix or Chippewa, but I think it was.
Representative Zetnik, can you?
It's more curious than anything how much St. Croix gained.
I think it was 5 cents, something like that, very modest.
Oh, but like, what does it come out to?
Oh, I don't know that number. It's substantial.
Yeah, I was just curious because they're in such a, heavy traffic or heavy tourism slash.
Well, that's exactly
commuter.
Why they instituted, because then they're actually taxing people who are tourists. Who are using their roads.
Mm-hmm. Right, like we all pay in Chicago. All right, so I appreciate those questions. Other questions? Going once, going twice. I appreciate everyone's willingness to be here today for the presentation, and you're certainly welcome to stay for subsequent items, but I understand if legislators need to leave. I would just like to introduce our intergovernmental relations staff, though, so if you could stay for just 2 minutes, but then I'll understand if anyone needs to duck out. So, with that, thank you, Ms. Stevens. Appreciate the presentation, and we will follow up with some of those other questions, the answers to those questions. Thank you. With that, we'll take item 2. Yeah, there, item 2. So, and with that, for item 2, we'll be.